Hello, welcome everyone. It is FMC. I am Jeremy. That is SP3. It is Tuesday, October 1st, the first day in October. That's why they call it October 1st, right? That how?
Yeah, I think so.
Time works. How you doing, SP3?
I am doing well. We got some basketball to talk about on a Tuesday. It's been too long since we did that, but we also still got some challenge to discuss. I can discuss a little bit about 90 Day Fiance, update y'all on what's going on over there after the great segment. I even have my missus watch y'all reacting to all the people we've been seeing on before the 90 days, so want to talk about that some more. But yes, we got some basketball to discuss, a big trade blockbuster.
Yes, before we get into it, guys, leave a thumbs up on the video. That helps us out here on the channel. You can leave a super chat, get your question, comment, statement read on air. Subscribe to the channel if you've not done that. I now do a show every single day of the week on this channel. Well, every single weekday, not on the weekends. I try to, I don't take the weekends off necessarily, but I'm not on screen on the weekends. I take the weekends off from being on screen. But otherwise,
this guy's on YouTube more than me now.
That's never true. That is never true. You do like 8 shows in a week. I'm not even joking.
Hey, when this is a pay-per-view week, you're kind of right that I'm doing a Vince McMahon documentary review on Friday. So yeah, it's 7 days this week for me.
Yeah. It's every single day you're on YouTube. Jerome YouTube. Over here. Remember that nickname? My God.
Still in use. I just bring it out when I do my tier list. Tier list Jerome.
Oh, let's get into it. We did have a huge trade announced Friday night. This all went down, I believe. I just remember, I have my tweet. It's not like I tweet that much, compared to some of our other friends here on this channel and just in general. September 27th, whenever that day was, Friday night. It was Friday night.
Yeah.
September 27th at 10:14 p.m. Here I am, just finished covering SmackDown. I'm like, oh, okay, let's head on out for the night. Rampage is on, sure, matches, whatever. I'll hang out, maybe watch some of that, but I'm done. Let me close the computer down. I'm done for the night. Shams tweets, breaking, the Minnesota Timberwolves are nearing a trade to send all-star Karl Anthony Towns to the New York Knicks. And I audibly, the wife is sitting next to me, I audibly am just like, the fuck? And she's like, what is happening? What's going on? And I'm like, oh, it's basketball related, so I don't know how much you'll understand, but like, here's what's happening. Karl Anthony Towns is getting traded and to the Knicks. And I'm immediately thinking who's going back in return. She didn't quite get it, but she, you know, that was now her whole timeline of like, everybody just reacting, huh? What's going on? What do you mean? And it turns out Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo are going to the Minnesota Timberwolves. What was your reaction when this happened, SP3?
So this was a rare Friday night where I had the night off from going on YouTube with our good friend Rick Uccino and Dutch Mantel to review a SmackDown episode. So literally once SmackDown ended, turned my TV off, it's 3 a.m. over here, and I went to sleep. And then I woke up to a whole bunch of messages in group chats, individual messages to me. And I was like, what the hell? Why do I have so many notifications? And then I open up Twitter and I see Sham's tweet. And it's official by then when I wake up in the morning around like 4 a.m. your time. And it says the Knicks have acquired Karl Anthony Towns from Minnesota for Julius Randle, Dante DiVincenzo, and a first round pick via Detroit. And I was just like, you guys are ruining me hating on the Knicks. Like, my whole thing over the last couple of years is I try to keep the same energy with Knicks fans that they have kept with me. Through all for the last 24 years, when the Lakers were winning championships with Shaq and Kobe, I've been getting hated on been freaking harassed by Knicks fans. So no matter what the Knicks do, Carmelo Anthony era, anything they do, last couple of years with Jalen Brunson, I've been keeping the same energy and I've been hating on the Knicks. I've been like, oh, you guys are good. You might make it past the first round, but you're getting bumped in the second round. How can I hate on this? How can I not say the Knicks is the second best team? We had a whole debate about a month and a half ago about me defending the Philadelphia 76ers and saying them getting Paul George is bigger than what the Knicks were doing. But, like, when you get Karl Anthony Towns, one of, like, the top five or six centers in this league, one of the greatest shooting big men of all time, and on percentage probably the greatest. How can I hate on this? Like, the Knicks are the second, if not the best team in the Eastern Conference. I would say Boston still has the edge, but you can make the argument, depending on how things shape out, depending on how Thibodeau is going to be, you know, back with Kat. I don't know how that's going to work out, but this is a huge move and gives them another legitimate star. Like, I think Julius Randle did very well, and I would say the Knicks fans probably won't appreciate the fact that Julius Randle was, like, kind of a difference maker in, like, turning the trajectory around for the New York Knicks. So, like, he got injured last year and they still did pretty well, you know, through the back half of the season and into the playoffs. But his missing, you know, time probably affected them and was the reason why they were just battered and bruised until the very end before going out in the playoffs. But, like, he was a difference maker as far as turning the trajectory around, and he really elevated his game with the New York Knicks. So to turn that, what Julius Randle was for the Knicks, and get a star on the caliber of Karl Anthony Towns, and yes, there are some faults with Karl Anthony Towns, and I'm sure we're going to get into it as we discuss this trade, but you cannot deny that the Knicks lineup on paper is one of the best, not just in the Eastern Conference, but in the entire league. I think their odds improve from, like, top five to, like, top three after the Karl Anthony Towns trade. I think they're right behind, if not, I think they're tied with the Thunder right now, but I think they're right behind the Boston Celtics as far as winning the championship next year. And we can't take anything into account with odds. Odds can do whatever they want, but on paper, this lineup is quite impressive. It kind of throws away the whole notion of, oh, we're building the Nova 4, because you got rid of one of the Nova 4 in this whole thing. But it's going to be very interesting for the Knicks, and Knicks is going to be one of the teams to watch just to see how this all shapes out and how everybody gels and develops chemistry together.
My initial take, after kind of sitting with it for once we learned all the details of it, I don't know if I like this trade for either team. Wow. I think this trade could backfire on both teams. Now, I think it also could work. Like, and that's where I'm sort of, I don't know how to quite feel about this. Here's my biggest thing. Making a trade of this magnitude, this is a big trade. This is not, we're trading, you know, the 12th, 13th guys on a team. These are starter level players. Everyone thought Randle was going to be in the starting lineup. DiVincenzo may or may not have been on the starting lineup. Regardless, he would have been sixth, seventh man at worst in the Knicks lineup. Karl Anthony Towns is the second best player on the Timberwolves. This is all-star level trade here. Making this trade on the eve of training camp. Training camp and media day, a lot of media day was yesterday. Most training camps are opening today. They're making these trades basically the last weekend before training camps open. When you do trades like that, it's going to take some time. I famously remember when OKC traded for Carmelo Anthony just a few days before training camp opened. And then now you hear Melo tell it of, like, yeah, there really wasn't a plan to, like, how I was going to be incorporated. Now, some of that is, like, I do think there was a little bit of plan. I also think Melo just didn't play very well because he wanted to do his jab step, take a bunch of shots, and he wasn't asked to do any of that. But there is some merit to the fact that these coaches, these players, they spent all summer, all offseason coming up of one style of play, and getting chemistry with one set of teammates. And now all of a sudden you are inserting a completely different player into the lineup. And like Karl-Anthony Towns obviously plays a lot different than Julius Randle plays. Randle and DiVincenzo are lots different players than Karl-Anthony Towns. The Knicks already underwent some big changes from last season's team to this season's team. They were already going to have to shift some things around, one with a full season of OG, with Mikal Bridges coming in, and with Julius Randle coming back from injury. Now they got to shift again to incorporate Karl-Anthony Towns. The Timberwolves, one of the things that everybody was kind of excited for them was, oh, they made the Western Conference Finals. They beat the defending champions. Towns played really well against Jokic. Like, they're going to build off of this. You know, they finally seem to figure something out. They had their best season basically ever, and they're going to build off of this with this same team. And now, 2 days before training camp opens, you've completely flipped that, and you've traded the longest tenure Minnesota Timberwolves, a guy who was happy to be there, a guy who went through all the different eras of the Timberwolves, survived so many different coaches, so many different regime changes, so many stars coming in and out. Now you've traded him away. You've brought in Julius Randle, whose playoff history isn't great. I mean, people want to knock Towns, but Randle's been worse in the playoffs than he has. Yeah. And now you're looking, and a lot of it was to do, well, oh, we want to compete long-term with Anthony Edwards. Fine, but did you just upset him by trading a guy that he defended all last season, a guy who he felt like he had a good relationship with, and trading him to not compete for the next couple of years? Not like Minnesota's this top-tier free agent destination. Not like players are clamoring to come to Minnesota or anything. So it's a trade that the personal aspect, the chemistry aspect, I'm almost looking at more than what the fit is on the court. Because we can now get into the fit on the court. Minnesota, they've killed their spacing with Julius.
I this is why I think I'm more positive on the Knicks than I am on Minnesota. I 100% agree with the Minnesota side of what you're saying, because this doesn't make any sense. You went to the conference finals with that team, and 2 days before training camp, you decide to trade your second best player? For what? For what? It's like, yeah, you get a first round pick via Detroit, which is always going to be viable because it's a first round pick from Detroit, one of the worst teams in the NBA. But I mean, I haven't heard anything about the draft classes in the next couple of years.
It might not even convey, because it's like top 11 protected, top 13 protected.
Yeah, exactly. You don't even know what year that's going to come through. And yeah. Julius Randle coming off of injury. You know,
off a shoulder injury. Like, he's not a great shooter to begin with. He had like one good season where he shot well from three. That seemed to be more an anomaly than his actual form. Yeah. And now we're talking a shoulder injury. How's he going to look with that injury shooting wise?
I'm not sure about that, even though Julius Randle is, of course, a former Laker great. But Dante DiVincenzo, I do like that. If they had traded anyone else besides Karl-Anthony Towns, and they're getting Dante DiVincenzo and taking a risk on Julius Randle, I'd be fine. If this was Rudy Gobert for these two guys, then that's a steal. But like with Karl-Anthony Towns, it really makes me question, like, what was the thinking? What was the thinking process on this? I want to hear. Like, I'm gonna be looking up like the training camp and the interviews and stuff like that. Like, what was the thinking in trading your second best player, one of the, like I said, top five, top six centers are big men in the NBA, in Karl-Anthony Towns? And yes, Towns hasn't played well in the playoffs, hasn't played well late into the season, but he is still in that regard of he's an all-star big man, one of the best shooters above 7 feet in the game today. So it just baffles me. I'm more optimistic about the Knicks developing some type of chemistry with the players that they have, and the fact that they have so many wings that they can kind of counterbalance the fact that they're losing someone like Dante DiVincenzo, who is good on defense, who could shoot the ball well. When you got a Bridges, you got an OG. Maybe they thought about, you know, they had too many wings or players that could do similar things to what Dante can do, and they thought that they can afford to get a big man. Because I think this is a move for the Knicks that is trying to give them something that necessarily the Boston Celtics doesn't have. The Boston Celtics is, as the reigning champions, everybody is basing their lineup or what they want to have on the court to beat the Boston Celtics. And to have someone who could stretch the floor, who could get, you know, some of their big men out of the paint and shoot that ball from the outside, it makes sense for the Knicks. And I can see them actually developing some chemistry. The real big question mark as far as the Knicks with Carl Anthony Towns on the team is how he's going to gel with Thibodeau, because it didn't work out too well the first time. So that's going to be the most interesting part of this. I think the players can develop chemistry and work with Carl Anthony Towns and what he can do on the court, but I'm not too sure how Thibodeau is going to work with Kat.
It seems like they've repaired their relationship from everything that I've read. They didn't get along when Thibodeau was in Minnesota. You know, Thibodeau plays a certain style of defense that certainly younger Carl Anthony Towns was not playing. Now Towns has matured a little bit. He does try harder on that end. So we'll see how kind of the fit is. And, you know, he's surrounded by guys who Brunson is small. Brunson tries hard on defense. He has his limitations just because of size. You got Josh Hart, you got OG, you got Mikal, whose defense slipped last season, but I think in this environment will be a little bit better suited to get back to his defensive ways that we kind of saw in Phoenix. Like, you're surrounding him with good defensive players. Offensively, they'll be able to play five out. They'll be able to get shots from anywhere they want all over the floor. Like, I see the vision for the Knicks. I still worry, one, their depth takes a hit now. They're going to need Miles McBride, who played well in the playoffs. They're going to need him to be now that sixth man for the team where DiVincenzo was going to be. Tibbs is only going to play seven guys in the playoffs anyway, maybe six, yeah, maybe four, depending on who's hurt. But like, during the regular season, you need guys who are going to eat some minutes. Because this is what happened to the Knicks in the playoffs last year, and what happens to Thibodeau teams famously. Guys get run down in the regular season, and then by the playoffs, they got nothing left. It's Thibodeau's career history when it comes to people. And we saw it last year with the Knicks. You've now taken away a guy who could have eaten some of those minutes in the regular season. So where do they find those minutes in the regular season to keep guys healthy in the playoffs? Towns has missed time. Towns has missed time over the past few seasons. Is he going to be able to hold up through an entire regular season and then into the playoffs? We shall see.
Long stretch into the playoffs, if God willing, for the Knicks. You know, you want to get, I think they can, with this team, they can at least get to the conference finals. They have the second best team in the Eastern Conference officially now, to me. They have the second best team in the Eastern Conference. I know a lot of people that, like yourself, were saying that they were the second best team even without this trade, but I think that this kind of confirms it. I do agree with you. It does hurt their depth, and they're going to need that for the regular season, especially considering what happened last season, where they were the walking dead towards the stretch of their last series, with everybody going down and getting hurt. And I hate to say it, we might be seeing the same thing because of that depth issue. We might be, they might have a good regular season, but when it comes to the playoffs, maybe injuries catch up to them again. But we got to see how this is all going to work out first in the regular season and how they're going to gel as a team. And I think it's Brandon in the chat made a good point. We're going to see right off the bat how they play against the Boston Celtics on opening night.
Oh, I think the Celtics are going to hammer them. And I don't mean that in like, oh, the Celtics are just a much better team than the Knicks. I've seen too many times, I'll give the biggest example right off the bat of when the Heatles got put together, Wade, Bosch, LeBron, and they lost on opening day. The Warriors, the Kevin Durant Warriors, when they got put together, they lost to the Spurs on opening night. when these teams that come together in the offseason, when they make big changes, significant changes in the offseason, typically if they play another really good team on opening night, and look, Boston's the defending champions here, not the Knicks. Boston's got the team that has been together for many seasons now, at least that core. And they're retaining basically the same team that won a title. The Knicks, they're going to have like two weeks together, and then they got to play the defending champions. I don't think it's going to go well for the Knicks.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hessilo V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com. This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Honestly, like, but I wouldn't put that in a, I wouldn't put that as an indicative of what we're going to see for the Knicks all season. It's a very long season. People are obviously going to overreact if the Celtics completely come out and dominate them, but I wouldn't put too much stock into that opening night game. I will say, I think the Celtics are going to hammer them on opening night.
I can see that. I can definitely see that.
For the Timberwolves side of things, Chris in the chat saying cap reasons, flexibility for the Timberwolves. Yeah, that's been the line of the Towns' contract is terrible. My cat is speaking of cats, click at her.
It's because I wrote that headline. That's what the cat's like. I'm gonna come through the screen and get this dude.
Towns' contract obviously has a long term contract with a lot of money eating up, and the Timberwolves were going to have to do something at some point because they want to pay Naz Reid. They got Jaden McDaniels, Nickel Walker Alexander. They got guys that they're kind of need to have to pay coming down the line. And it was going to be tougher with Karl Anthony Towns' contract, along with Rudy Gobert's contract. Let's not be like, oh, they only had to trade Karl Anthony Towns. They were going to get more for Towns than Rudy Gobert. That's the point of this. They weren't going to get Randall and DiVincenzo in return for Rudy Gobert. I don't know what they would have gotten for Gobert. I don't know if they even tried to shop around for Gobert, but he wasn't going to bring as much as Towns was going to bring. But like we were talking about, okay, it gives them cap reasons and flexibility. Maybe they can retain these guys, which is nice, but then you're just paying Naz Reid and Nickel Walker Alexander. Naz Reid's a good player, can do something similar to Towns as far as his shooting. He's not good on defense, though. His defense was completely exposed in the playoffs. And, I don't know his long-term. Is he going to be the starter now? When it comes to Randall and DiVincenzo, okay, you get Randall off the books earlier than you get Towns off the books. DiVincenzo, they tried to get him in free agency last year. He ended up going to the Knicks. Like we were talking about, they might have the money to spend. Are people going to come to Minnesota? It's not like Minnesota has been this hotbed free agency destination. So it's nice to have this money, but that doesn't mean you're going to get anybody off of it. And when it looks at the play style, now they've completely changed. Anthony Edwards loves to drive. He loves to attack the paint. Now you got Randall and Gobert in the paint, and you've kind of hurt your spacing with this. Like, where Julius Randall, ain't no one scared of his three-point shot. they'll give it to him. If he makes it, more power to him. But he's going to have to prove that he can make it. Obviously, look, Gobert ain't going outside of...
He's staying his ass right there in the paint. He's going to get his offensive rebounds, his defensive rebounds, but he ain't getting out the paint. Yeah, it's going to be up to Randall to see if he can make the shot. But it's definitely kind of, in my opinion, I think that it really hurts their chances of getting back to the conference finals. And it definitely is going to affect my predictions for the beginning of the year of where I think they're going to land by the end of the year as far as like in the Western Conference.
Here's where I think Randall and DiVincenzo help. Well, I love the DiVincenzo fit. I think he's a guy that any team should want. Plays hard on defense, can knock down threes from like at a 40% clip. So that's he's a perfect 3-and-D guy who slots into any team, can handle the ball a little bit as well. Should take some of the playmaking responsibilities off of Mike Conley, who's a year older at this point, and Edwards. Randall's also a good playmaker. Randall will kind of back to the basket, bully ball. How that works when you also have Gobert in the game, not quite sure. Because again, he's not going to stretch out or anything. So now you got another guy in the paint where you're trying to bully your way in there, but nobody's worried about Gobert. You send a double over. Randall's got to prove he can kind of make that short pass. And I think he can. Randall has proven in the past he can be a very good playmaker. I think Randall can take some of the offensive pressure in the half court off of Anthony Edwards, as far as just back to the basket, try to bully guys or making plays off the dribble. I do worry that Randall is a ball stopper. And if if they're trying to run anything, Anthony Edwards is trying to run anything, Anthony Edwards wants his shot, there's a very real possibility that Julius Randle will tunnel vision his way into the paint and the ball won't get to Anthony Edwards. So I do think that's a concern. And again, going back to my first point of the Minnesota Timberwolves had chemistry laid out. Everything was good with that team last year. The way they talked about each other, the way the city, the media was talking about Minnesota, it was like, this felt like it was year one of a process. I guess technically 2 years ago was year one.
Yeah.
But last year, it was year two of like, oh, we did some good growing things this year. We beat the defending champions, made the conference finals. All right, we lost to Dallas, but Dallas, they went to the finals. They played well. They got two all-star caliber players. They've won a top five player on their team. Anthony Edwards is going to get better. Everyone understands their role on this team. Towns gave the reins to Anthony Edwards. Everyone bought in to what they were doing. Now you take all that away with one trade. You take all away the chemistry built last year and everything going into this season where guys knew their role going into this season. Anthony Edwards knew he had to do this. Cal Anthony Towns knew he had to do this. All the role players knew what they had to do. Well, now it's like, oh, now I got to adjust to Randall's game. You take Randall. Now he's got to adjust to these guys' game. And it's not something that happens overnight. I always like to say it's not 2K. 2K, you figure it out. You do what you need to do. It's very simple. You run the play and the players execute the play. They are robots in video games. They're not robots in real life.
Yeah,
so it's gonna be an adjustment period for them.
And I was looking forward to, seeing what they were going to do, because Anthony Edwards, I think, is going to take another step in the direction of being like one of the top 10, top five players in the league. And I think he's already top 10, in my opinion, like right at the cusp of the top 10, if not in it already. And I thought he was going to take a next step after playing with Steph Curry and LeBron James and Kevin Durant in the Olympics. He got that kind of confidence, got the play with some of the greatest players of all time. He's going to take that next step. And I think that he's still going to take that next step this season, but how is the team going to do with like adjusting and changing? They probably have to change their style of play with the Julius Randle. I think Dante DiVincenzo, like I said, I'll say it once, I'll say it again. Dante DiVincenzo feels like the whole reason why Minnesota made this trade. Like they really wanted him last season. And if they would have traded anyone else on their team, literally, they could have traded their third best player in Rudy Gobert. And I would have not been like feeling the same thing that I'm feeling right now, where I'm like, Minnesota, definitely is going down the paces. Like, they were, what, top four team last season. I don't see that for them this season. Don't see that. I think that they're bottom four. They're going to still make the playoffs, but they're bottom four.
I don't think they're going to fall as far as I see TC in the chat. He says the Wolves fan. He says Wolves will be seventh seed at best.
I can see them being like five or six.
I got too much faith in Anthony Edwards. Maybe that's where I'm going wrong, but I have too much faith in Anthony Edwards to think they're going to fall that far. I also haven't been the biggest Karl Anthony Towns fan. Like, I know what he brings to the table. I think he's been very good in Minnesota. Like, he's also a level player, but I'm not as sold on him as a lot of people are. I'm looking more at the chemistry stuff than the X's and O's stuff. It does change the way they play. I don't know if it's necessarily for the better or worse, but I do think that it's going to be just the adjustment. And again, the chemistry, you know, TC saying we lost two locker room guys this offseason. That's what I've been talking about this whole time. Is like, everyone bought in. Everyone was all in for Minnesota and what they needed to do coming into this offseason. And now you flip that in one night on two, you know, just days before media day and training camp opened.
And they overachieved last season. Like, this is, you're making, like, the more you talk, I'm just like shaking my head like, Why would you even do
you this? Know, and look, SP3, you can vouch for this. Long-term viewers can vouch for this. We've been doing this show for almost 2 years now. You know, I'm very big. It actually might be over 2 years.
I think it's three.
You know, I'm very big on like stability and chemistry and stuff. Why did I pick the Nuggets 2 years ago? It's because they retained a lot of their team. And they got a healthy Jamal Murray. Why did I pick Boston this past year? They retained a lot of their team. They made some minor changes with Marcus Smart. That was a big deal. But they kept Jaylen Brown. They kept Jason Tatum. They, you know, Al Horford, big chemistry guy, brought in Porzingis and everything. They retained their core guys. I'm big on chemistry and just retaining that core and keeping teams together. And look, if it's not working, it's not working. Minnesota was working. They made the conference finals. This is not a case of like, oh, well, nothing really went well for us, so we got to finally blow this up. I'm big on keeping teams together if you see that the process is taking steps and getting better instead of just shifting it and blowing things up, especially 2 days before training camp. What are we doing? What are we doing? You want to make this move at the start of the offseason and then give coaches and players time to figure things out and build relationships? Okay. Then I'm a little bit more accepting of it. But doing this just days before training camp, I'm like, oh, no. You've now – everything that Thibodeau and Chris Finch were working on for the entire offseason, rip it up. Rip it up. Because now you got to do something completely different.
It's baffling. It's a baffling trade. You say for both sides. I say more for Minnesota for sure. And I'm excited to see what the Knicks are going to do with Karl Anthony Towns. But yeah, they have the obstacle of gelling together as well. But it's gonna make it an even more interesting season than it already was looking at. We were very quiet on the NBA over the last couple of weeks, probably the last month and a half. Very quiet on the NBA, except for the little blurb that was the Olympics and Steph Curry going crazy over there. But as far as like NBA moves, it was very, very quiet all season. I think we had the first couple of days or first week of the free agency, but it wasn't like the kind of like the last couple of off seasons where it never rested. We were talking about something going on in the off season, and they waited 2 days before training camp to give us the biggest block. Blockbuster move, really, of the offseason.
Our season preview will probably be in 2 weeks. I think the season starts in about 20 days. So our season preview will be in about 2 weeks, everybody. We'll kind of dive more into this trade and dive more just into the offseason and dive into the regular season and everyone can learn 6 months early who will win the title, because I'm 2 for 2 the last 2 years.
And, well, we're as a team. See, I think about the team. See, I'm better at gelling and chemistry as a team. And it has been 3 years because I predicted the Warriors in 2022.
So there you go. So, yes, as look, you come here, you learn who wins the title months early, months before it all happens. You don't even need to watch the regular season. We're going to tell you who wins the title.
We got you.
Ryan did leave a super chat. Said, just woke up. My Bulls going to be cheeks again.
Yo, did you see that picture with LaVine?
Oh, yeah. And
they did not look happy.
It was, why post that? I don't think that was from an official Bulls account. I think it was like one of the fan, but they had to get it from somewhere. But yeah, it didn't, it wasn't good. They didn't look like they were thrilled to be there. I don't know what the Bulls are going to do. Part of me wants to be a little optimistic about them because I see sort of the vision of the way that they want to play and then what Josh Giddey brings. I'm also like deathly afraid of like, oh, Josh Giddey is like going to figure it out in Chicago and prove that like he's a good player and flourish with more ball opportunities and things like that. But then I'm also like, man, he couldn't shoot a lick. I don't know if that's going to get better in Chicago. Their defense, I don't think is going to be very good because that's not going to get any better in Chicago. Vucevic is another year older. Zach LaVine, he's got two knees that don't work. Like, I don't know what that team is going to look like. They got to figure something out as far as trades. We're going to hear the LaVine rumors basically all year, as we always do when it comes to the Bulls.
And they'll probably not trade him again, as they always do.
It's a tough contract to trade, though. Like, now there's at least a year off of it, but it's a tough contract. Like, nobody wants to take on that deal where – I mean, he doesn't become an unrestricted free agent until 2027. You're stuck with that deal for another 2 years because he has a player option and he's making $48 million on that player option. He's taking that money. He's not getting
much. Definitely take the money. I mean,
he's not getting that much as a free agent, at least most likely he's not. So he's going to take that player option. So you're on the hook for that contract for at least another 2 years, not counting this upcoming season. Is he going to be 31 by that point? That's a tough contract to take with his history of health as well. So it's not an easy trade to make. But as we learned on Friday night, I don't think there's any like non-trades out there. If you want to move a player that bad, at some point circumstances will line up and you will find a taker for that contract. Teams will figure something out to where you can move. Everyone thought Russell Westbrook's contract was untradeable and he got moved like three different times before, you know, he ended up in Denver. Well, first he ended up with the Clippers and then signed free agency, signed smaller deals, but like, yeah, you can move these deals. It's just finding a general manager who's willing to take it.
It's finding a suitor who's going to take it on, but I'm willing to hold out hope that this might finally be the year that Zach LaVine moves on from the Chicago Bulls and become happy again, because that made me really sad. I used to be a Zach LaVine fan. I used to root for him in all the slam dunk contests, but he don't look happy in Chicago, unfortunately.
I have no sympathy for the Bulls. Nah. You got always get the White Sox, everybody. How they
fair. How they do it. Fair. Phil Lindsay is one of the Laker haters out there, so fair. I don't care.
Zach LaVine for D'Angelo Russell and draft picks, and who else has got to be in that deal? Probably one of the young players, Julian Schifino. Is that his name? Julian Schifino?
Schifino, yeah.
Yeah, Schifino. No. That's the deal that's going to have to be made. I'm deathly afraid of Wemby. Like, teams gotta get it in this year, because I think within 2 years, Wemby's gonna be just It's over for the league.
Plus,
it's
he's playing with Chris Paul. Like, for all the bad I've said about Chris Paul,
yeah, for about 20 games.
He's gonna learn from him being on the bench. He's gonna learn from playing in practice with him. He's gonna learn from him, regardless of how long and how many games Chris Paul eventually plays.
Yeah, yeah. Chris Paul's just gonna throw the ball up there, and Wemby's just gonna go get it. It's gonna be, the Spurs will be fun in that aspect of it. All right, let's welcome our pal, Cher Delaware, as we get into some challenge talk. Hello, Cher, how are you?
I'm here.
As we welcome,
Cher. And since Cher is here now, I want to thank everyone who's been watching FMC over the last 2 weeks. Last 2 weeks, our most viewed episode talking about the challenge. Our most viewed. Last week did like over 600 views. So you guys are loving us talking about the challenge. We love talking about the challenge. But I also think last week was so high because I gave y'all the rundown of the lineup for 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days, season 7. And this week, before we get into the challenge, I actually went on the Fightful StreamYard and I've uploaded pictures of some of the cast. So y'all can see, y'all can have faces to connect with the names. Yes.
Oh, I see them. Okay. I didn't notice these before.
I literally just downloaded.
Okay.
So I have here, this is the name that kind of caught Cher's attention the most. This is Tiger Lily.
This bitch looks like a Tiger Lily.
Yeah. I was gonna say that definitely checks out. That name checks out.
She sounds like Kourtney Kardashian. Like legit. No. Like legit, if you close your eyes and you hear her talk, she sounds like Kourtney Kardashian.
I can't even do a Kourtney Kardashian voice because it's so annoying. Like
so monotone and just at one level.
Like the most uninteresting person in the world. Yeah.
So yeah, the latest episode saw her, you know, doing the wedding celebration, and she's still unsure of the rules where she can't be in a room with a man without her husband, but her husband can take his shirt off in front of one of her friends and still be in the same room. So it's weird. Then you have, this is Renee or Rain. This was the scene where the aforementioned scene where I told y'all last week where she started freaking out because they were about to kill a chicken and she admitted that she eats chicken. She was like, if you put the chicken on the grill, I'm gonna put him on the grill, talking about the chitty who is standing next to her.
She looks like a bitch who can't spell.
And then finally we have Lauren, who has chlamydia of the penis.
Oh no, I forgot.
The girl had gonorrhea of the throat. He has gonorrhea of the penis.
Oh god.
He has
can't keep all these diseases and orifices straight here.
Clearly. Oh no.
Yeah, and oh my god, the latest before 90 Day Fiance episode had him telling Faith that he had gonorrhea of the penis, and he literally says it like, "I have gonorrhea," with a smile. He said it with a smile. Oh my god, me and my missus was in, we had to rewind it like 3 times to be like, "Why is he smiling? Why is he smiling when he tells her that he has gonorrhea?" And he's told that he can't kiss her.
He's very proud of the fact that he's had sex. He's really proud. He wants everyone to know.
To be fair.
Exactly. Right? You don't need to say anything more. Exactly.
What is he wearing?
He works in like burlesque shows in Las Vegas. So I think he's wearing one of those attires.
Okay. Yeah. Good, yes, that makes some
god
sense. All right,
that's all I got for you this week. Well, I'll probably share some more pictures next week. There we go.
Okay.
All right, SP3, I'm gonna throw it over to you. We're gonna get into the challenge here. We're gonna set this all up where leading into the latest episode of the challenge.
Let me see if I remember everything.
I know you guys get you. Both of you were very giddy and excited of like, I got rants to go on.
Oh my god. People. When we get to Josh is the ruin. He is the challenge production team's op. He's an op for the challenge production team. That's what I'm sure of.
Yeah. I mean, mine doesn't really have anything to do with this week's challenge. Mine is just...
So go for it.
Corey has two brain cells, and they work against each other 24/7. That man is so dumb. Like, okay, he is the only person on the challenge who is getting a year-round check from MTV. That man is on three shows. You've got him on the challenge. You've got him on the Team Mom family reunion or vacation or whatever the heck it's called. And then on the other Teen Mom. Like, he is literally, he doesn't have a job. They are paying him, everything that they pay is his paycheck. Yet he's mad because they're not paying him extra from the contract that he signed to do media. Now, this happened a few months ago when they were promoting season 40. Wasn't that what it was? They were doing media for season 40. He refused to go. Corey refused to go because they wouldn't pay him extra on top of what they'd already paid him that he signed a contract for that included media. Because Corey probably doesn't know how to read, so he did not read the contract, and he does not know what the contract entails. Now, when this all happened, our man Wes basically got on Twitter and was like, yeah, that's part of your contract. When you sign a contract, it has that you're supposed to do media to promote the show. He could have not told us that, and we all would have understood that that is the way that it works. They're not going to pay you extra to promote a show that they already paid you to be on. Like, that's part of it. Corey does not understand this, and Corey acted like a big baby and refused to do media. One, nobody gave a shit if Corey was there. Corey's never going to win anything. So... nobody cares. Nobody cares if you're there or not. So Wes posted that he was doing media for Traitors, wasn't it?
No, I think it was House of Villains.
Okay, House of Villains. One of those evil things that he's on. So he basically was making fun of Corey and said, doing media for it because it's in my contract, the contract that I signed, and that's the way that contracts work when you're promoting a show that you're going to be on. Obviously, you want people to watch the show that you're going to be on so the show gets renewed. You're going to make more money if you get to be on a show. Just a normal train of thought for those of us that have more than two brain cells. But for Corey, it's a struggle. So Corey quote tweets it and is telling Wes to shut up because he's mad because Corey's stupid. And he's like, why don't you go pander to your people on Patreon and your Cameo? So Wes responds with the links to both his Patreon and Cameo and is like, check them out. I'll talk more about them here. Like,
I'll talk about this expert trolling here. Yeah,
like, and Corey doesn't understand. So then Corey posts again and is like, I let it slide the first time, Wes. I'm not going to let it slide again of your talking shit. No, you're just stupid. You just don't understand that you agreed to do this. Why would they pay you extra? You were already paid. Like, that would be like people in, because this is wrestling, so I'm going to use that as an example. That would be like Bianca Belair refusing to do anything to promote a WWE show that she's already being paid to be on. No, you signed a contract. You signed a contract to do the media to promote this. Like, you don't get to get paid extra. And Corey's just too stupid to understand that. Just like the, I'm sure I don't have it anymore, but the day when what's his face was trolling him, Fessy, when Corey had put the pole wrestling, and he spelled pole wrestling so long, he called it Paul Russell. He said something about Paul Russell, and Fessy was Googling who Paul Russell was.
Yes.
Up from the challenge, because he's like, I was Googling Paul Russell and realized you're so dumb that you can't spell pole wrestling. When I sent that to you guys, I was also trying to figure out who Paul Russell was when I first read it. Like, he thinks he's so smart and he's not. And I just want to, like, even if Wes hadn't have been like, yeah, you're stupid. When I read that, I was like, Corey, you were already paid to do this, but he thinks he's so smart and so much smarter than everybody else. And we've seen this on the challenge time and time again, which is why Corey will never win, because Corey is not smart enough to do any of it. Like, he cannot actually figure out the gameplay because he's just dumb. And I always liked Nelson. Nelly T was also an idiot. So was Hunter. Like, those were those three together did not equal a normal person's intelligence. So, like, even those three together, that's why, I mean, Hunter won and still didn't win. So, like, that's why they're never going to do anything. Also, good for Nelson. Nelson is now training to do, like, Paralympic type of sports now. So, like, good for him. He's still trying to get out there and do it. They're still all really stupid. And Corey's an idiot. And that's all that I want to say. He just annoys me. Stupid people really get on my nerves. And stupid people who think that they're smart are just too much. And that's Corey. Like,
the young bucks. The young bucks of the MTV challenge. That's what they called themselves.
Oh, Hunter, yeah.
Nelly T.
They're really yucky, lucky that they never got, like, a cease and desist for that, too. Like...
Yeah, that would have probably happened now closer to.
Yeah.
But they never, like, marketed it as, like, merchandise, I don't think, or anything like that. They just called themselves that on the show. Like, I don't feel they could really do a
whole lot. Yeah, I don't think that they did. If they did, they absolutely would have been hit with one. But those three are just stupid.
But if you only watch the challenge, you should also be like, Corey is stupid, because the only reason the Young Bucks ever got far is because the Young Bucks were always close with the Lavender Ladies.
Yes.
And what did Corey do when he had power in this season? He voted in one of the only one of the Lavender Ladies that was left on this season. He's an idiot.
And yeah, he can't keep alliances because he's constantly trying to make new ones. But nobody wants him, because what asset is he? Nobody wants him in their alliance. So they're like, all right, we'll use him until we can't use him anymore. And he is too dumb to figure it out. Like, it's just amazing.
He was talking about in this past episode, he was like, yeah, I got a silver medal. I got a bronze medal. I try to get that gold medal. Corey, I'm just going to let you know. Sir, you're never going to get that gold medal. Because you're not a good finals performer. You need to be smart at puzzles. You need to be doing things that you can't do. I mean, you did it in the invitational, and that's all fine and dandy. I don't know if you can solve a puzzle in the final. So you're never going to win a final.
Even if he got last in the puzzle, he would have to do well enough to make up for it in all the other areas. And he just isn't there. He can't do that, and he has no strategy. That's what drives me insane. It's just like, I'm gonna go in here and I'm gonna win. Well, no, that's not how this works. You can't just go in there. Like, you have no allies, you have no strategy. Your only two friends, one of them's never coming on there again, and the other one literally lost his leg, so he's not gonna be on there either. So, like, It's just amazing to me. I don't know. He's an idiot. Paul Russell. Oh, Paul Russell.
Paul Russell. I remember when you sent that. I was like, is this a basketball player? What are we talking about?
I was literally like, who the hell is Paul Russell? Like, I was so confused. Nope, he's just stupid. God.
Esme, there, I know you want to say something about Josh, who made his impact on this game by being stupid, as he always does when it comes to this. Well, go ahead.
Well, let's actually talk about this episode, and then when we get to it, I'll talk about how dumb Josh is. This episode started off, they got back to the house after the last elimination, and of course, Laurel's all salty because she got picked to be a target again. And she's talking shit about Kara and telling Bananas, who Bananas, who's her number one ally, it seems, he look annoyed with her. He's like, she's like, oh.
You threw the challenge.
Yeah.
Like, what do you expect? That's what killed me this whole time. I'm sitting there like, am I living in a different world that she thinks that she can throw a challenge and they're not going to do anything? Like, what are you talking about?
And I love her obliviousness that she's blaming Kara and all the argument with Kara, and not the fact that she threw the challenge. Like, yeah. Like it's she's just so oblivious. She's like, she said, it's like when your little sister is poking you, and you just backhand slap her, and you slap her, and then she says, Mom, and then Mom punishes you. That's how I feel right now. And then she says some shit when Kara is in the room, like, oh, you know something about, you have kids, you have redheaded kids, and then walks away, and Kara's just like, Kara didn't even respond. She's just like shaking her head at this point. It's just like, you're the child. You're the one that's acting like the little sister here. Like, you're this whole sister thing. And yes, you're bigger of the two, but there can be a taller little sister. And that's what you are.
They're obsessed with the big sister, little sister example too. And I'm so sick of hearing it. Like,
I am too.
I'm the youngest of four. I never had a sibling backhand me, so I don't know what they're talking about. Like, and if one of my kids backhanded the other one, they would be in trouble. Like, we are not doing that.
I have two older sisters. I've never been backhanded. I've never been backhanded in my life. But hey, to each his own. Whatever they do. But yeah, they basically, Aviv told Kara, like, she's doing this to herself at this point. Like, it's whatever. So then we also see we have to do a check-in with the Vacation Alliance, and all, it was so cringed. Tori and Josh talking to each other, like, oh, you know, it's all about VA, Vacation Alliance. And then they did a little handshake. I was cringing. I was like, oh my God, this is so cringe. All right, but we finally got to the, we also heard Jenny, she was complaining about the fact that she was the one picked to be a target, and it's the second time she'd be in a target, and she's annoyed because she doesn't have, you know, any connections, so she's always getting picked. And then we had to hear from another one of these VA morons, Casey is trying to talk about Jenny being boring. What?
That was mind-blowing.
What type of world am I looking? I literally got more from Jenny in the little, her talking about what Jenny talks about. I know a little bit more about her personality, and she seems like she has a more fun personality than you that are making fun of her personality. Like, her talking about snacks, her talking about working out and stuff like that. The only issue that I had with Jenny is that her number one in the house is bananas. And yep. Pulling back the curtain a little bit, it's only because apparently the rumor is allegedly, they smashed after Total Madness. So that's the only reason that's her number one in the house. So they're talking and stuff, and they're talking about the fact she's annoyed because Michelle, it hasn't been up as a target yet, and she feels like she's being protected. And Banana's like, oh, it's because she's with Devin, and she's playing more of Devin's game, and we're friends outside of this, so I don't like that. And put a pin in that. We'll get back to that shortly, because this is how Bananas annoyed me on this episode. Then we got to the daily challenge, which was this, basically it was a team challenge, and it was a whole bunch of big balloons, and you had to protect your balloons. You had to run through like this dirt pit and run out of it. And then there's a whole lineup of balloons, and you have to grab the balloon, and you have to get it through basically multiple spikes on the side and up top and protect your balloon. And you have to get as many balloons as you can. And that was the key to this challenge. More than anything, it wasn't a time challenge. It was more about how many balloons you had at the end and how many balloons you protected and that you put on. And then it would bring up a riddle. And then you would have to solve the riddle that had like a number key with the letters. And that's how you open a like chest. And that's how you end the challenge. But most of all, it was about protecting the balloons. But I don't think Era 3 or 2 understood that. Era 1, they were screwed pretty much from jump, as usual. I feel like I'm saying that every week. But our good friend Derek, he got hurt.
This is where I mentioned before when we did our draft, it was like this man was walking around with a knee brace and looked like he couldn't do anything. So I feel like his challenge experience was pretty rough. Well, We found out how his challenge experience was rough because I don't know what happened, if he tore an ACL or if he just broke his leg, but he came up hobbling on this challenge here.
And legitimately, I thought after that, like, I was like, so are they going to do like a men's challenge, a men's elimination? Because like, I would think that the doctors would check him out after the challenge. And if he's serious that his leg felt broken, then he should probably be the one that be going home and you don't need a men's elimination. But more than that a little bit, they did horribly in this because they were down to, they only had five players to begin with. And then they were down to four with, or four and a half with Derek. But Era 2 did reasonably well because there was a nice little conference with the Era 2 before the challenge started. And Laurel was like, you know, I told my team, I apologize for everything. And we're gonna play the game the right way and we're going to win. And I love Kara. Kara was like, oh, this is my time to talk? Okay. I'm not like her. I know she's thrown challenges when I've been up for elimination, but I can't go out there and not go 100%. I wanted to, you know, sit down at the starting lineup, but me and Ryan, we're not like her. So we're going to play hard and we're going to protect our team and we're going to play to win. And the whole time, Laurel, I think Johnny tells her, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And she literally repeated that line to herself. She's like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Like she couldn't answer.
Kara,
you're a child, Laurel. You're a child.
I give Kara credit for not just immediately throwing this.
Absolutely.
Thing because
I'm way too petty. I would
me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I would have thrown this. I would have thrown this immediately.
Yeah, would have immediately been like, no, look, you guys are going in. Sorry about you on this one. But she
and of course. She's not going to get credit from Laurel for not immediately because Laurel would have done it to her.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. So they did actually pretty well. They even had the line, I think Kara did a confessional during the challenge where Laurel's like yelling at her, like, you're like, Kara, do this. She's like, I'm toning her out. I'm just going to do what I have to do to win this. But Era 3, I think their real issue is the fact that Jordan does not play well with others. And he has an issue with yelling. Like, He did it in the elimination later. He did it here. He did it in the last daily challenge. But he yells like an absolute maniac. Like, he is just barking at Jonae at one point. Like, you have to protect the balloon. And then he turns around and his balloon pops because of the wind. The way the balloons were popping were just hilarious. Like, they would get to, like, the edge of it and it would just start popping and stuff like that. But Era 2 and Era 3 pretty much finished at the same time. But like I said, this is more about protecting the balloons. And whoever had the most amount of balloons at the end, it did not matter how fast you did it. So Era 4 came in at 4 if this was a time challenge, but they protected the most amount of balloons. So in the end, despite Era 2 and Era 3 finishing before them, Era 4 wins. So Jenny and Josh are protected. They make the decision in deliberation. Era 4 was in last place. So that meant that it was going to be Rachel and Brad in the elimination. Era 1 was in last place. So Rachel and Brad would go straight to elimination. And then it came down to basically Era 4's choice of Era 2 and Era 3, which was Era 2 was Johnny Bananas and Laurel, and Era 3 was Corey and Johnny.
And this is where Josh, as usual, does not make the game move that he should make. Everyone's saying you only get so many opportunities to get Bananas and Laurel, who everyone knows are big players. You only get so many opportunities. Yes. You only get so many opportunities to get them into an elimination. You can now get them both into an elimination at the same time. You have to take this shot. And Era 4 is working with Era 3. So it's like, well, this is perfect. You protect your alliance. You get Bananas and Laurel down there. You're good. But what happens is Josh feels so much guilt overthrowing bananas in on, I forget what the challenge.
USA 2.
Yeah, USA 2. Thank you, USA 2. He felt so much guilt over throwing bananas in that season that he cannot do it again. He cannot throw bananas in for this. And SP3, do you have words to say about our friend Josh?
You see, my issue with Josh is not even all that. If he was going to go in and he was going to make the choice at the end of the day and bananas guilt tripping him and him being easily manipulated was the solution of all this and that's how it went down, I don't think I would be just as upset as I am right now. The reason why I'm really upset is before we even get to the deliberation, he sits down with his team. He's like, hey, guys, you know, we worked really well together. So we don't want this to be a me and Jenny situation making the choice. We want to ask you guys, who do y'all think we should put in? And everybody and their mama said Bananas and Laurel. Put in Era 2. We have a whole alliance with Era 3. Put in Era 2. That is the way. You're putting Laurel against Rachel. And in this challenge, I think Rachel would have still won. So yeah. You would have got rid of Laurel. You would have made the house a lot more peaceful. Maybe Brad still loses to Bananas because the way we can talk about the elimination, the way Brad was throwing, he would have lost to anybody. But you had an opportunity to put in two of the favorites to win this challenge. Instead, you put in Corey, who's never a threat to win any challenge. Yeah, so you're not helping. That. You're not helping your game, Josh. Like, it's just my... And he literally says in the deliberation when he does the confessional, he's like, Corey's always been my friend. Corey has never, you know, backstabbed me. Corey's always had my back. And they showed a scene from Double Agents when Corey was giving him a pep talk and stuff like that. And it's just like, oh my God, he is the dumbest individual.
And you know who's never going to have your back? Bananas.
Bananas. He has so many people before you, or he will choose himself over everybody every single time.
And that's the biggest thing, is he's going to choose himself over everybody. Yes. There are people before him, but at the end of the day, it's Bananas number one.
It's just mind-boggling that Josh made this decision after everyone on his team, including the Vacation Alliance, because he had Tori and Devin on Era 3 telling him, yeah, you should definitely put in Bananas and Laurel. You had everybody on Era 4 telling you, yeah, you should definitely put in Bananas and Laurel. And he allowed Bananas to basically guilt trip him. Where Bananas was like, you know, we made that promise to each other on USA 2 that we would never say each other's name, and you said that name, and it's very rare in life and in the challenge that you have a chance to redeem yourself, and you have that chance here.
I got no choice but to respect Bananas for playing.
Yeah, I respect Bananas. Hell yeah. It. No, this is no fault. This is no fault of Bananas. It worked. It worked at the end of the day. And you literally have Beloro in the confessional. Like, I don't know how this happened. I don't know. You know, have Bananas, a 7-time champion. You have me coming off a win.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we're not going into elimination, but I must be lucky.
Yeah, Laurel just being like, I don't get how this happened. Like, wow, we're really lucky. It's like, even she, like, granted, she's, you know, doing this whole, woe is me, I'm so lucky type of thing. Like, even she is like, these people got to be stupid. Yeah. You have Bananas and me up on the block here, and you put in Corey and John A. Like, what, huh? In what world does this make sense? To do.
Listen, I don't care if they were in my alliance. They would be going up. At best, I could maybe get rid of one of them.
Yeah.
Like,
you gotta take the shot.
You have to. With those two, you have to take the shot. And I swear to God, I said nice things about Josh last week. And then the time when I was talking about defending him over the freaking hooking up with Naya. And then he did this. I'm like, this is why I don't say nice things about you, Josh. This is why. Like,
you're an idiot. You are quite possibly you have one of the strongest alliances that has come through the challenge in quite some time with this Vacation Alliance. And you just continue to make dumb choices that always cost you in the end. You did this in USA 2. USA 2 was the most positive we ever were on this show about Josh, because he had that deliberation where he manipulated everybody and he got them to choose what he wanted to choose. But then he failed us when he threw in Wes. Then he failed again when he throws in Bananas. And then in the end, he doesn't even make it to the final while Bananas does. So even you throwing in Bananas in USA 2, it did not affect Bananas' game. So why are you so upset?
And the thing is, I actually don't think Josh is stupid. I just think Josh is so desperate for everyone to like him that he is so easily manipulated, because Josh wants friends. Josh wants everyone to like him. Josh doesn't want people to be mad at him or anything. And so he's like, well, if I do this, then it's going to make Bananas mad, and then Laurel's going to be mad. Like, no, this is still a game. Dude, you were on Big Brother. Come on. Like, you should understand game strategy. You can't be everyone's friend, and it is a game. Laurel is going to take it all to heart, because Laurel takes everything to heart. So you can't even, I mean, it doesn't matter. You can't even take that into consideration. Anybody else that realizes this is a game is going to be like, man, that sucks. But they're not going to hold it against you for the rest of their life. Like, you have to play the game and stop being on there trying to make friends with everybody, because these people are not your friends. Like,
I also think he's a little bit stupid.
I think he's stupid too.
I think he's stupid, but I don't think he's like Corey level stupid. Like, I don't know. I just think he's easy. Corey's too stupid to even be manipulated. You can't even manipulate Corey because he doesn't understand. Like, Josh is just easily manipulated, because it's like, and Bananas knows it. That's why Bananas goes and does it, because he's like, oh yeah, I'm absolutely going to have him in my hand, and he's going to do whatever I want. And then there's Josh just following him around him like a big freaking idiot dog. And he's like, yep, going to do what Bananas says. Like, after putting on that whole show saying everybody should get a choice in it and everything, and then does that. And I'm like, why? Why do we even go through all that? I don't understand.
Yes.
Oh, go ahead. Speak.
Yeah, I think to be fair to Josh, we have to also understand, and you know, Jeremy makes a good point that he wants people to, you know, be he's not dumb, he just wants people to be his friend. To be fair to him, he wouldn't have made it far in any of these seasons, no. And probably would have never got a call back if he didn't have friends.
Yeah.
It's because he has friends why he's able to go so long into these seasons and always.
Honestly, I think outside of the challenge, from everything that I've seen from people, Josh is a likable guy outside. Like, he's not a bad guy. I don't think he's meant for the challenge. And we've said this for years. We get sick of seeing him on there. Josh is someone else. He's never going to win a challenge unless he's on a team with the people who have his back and carry him the whole way. He's not going to win. So it's like, he's taking up a spot every time, which annoys me anyway, because there's so many other people that would be better fit to be on there. But this whole thing was just like, what are you doing? And he has done some dumb stuff on this challenge too, that we've all been like, you're an idiot. Why are you on here? But this took the cake, because I cannot imagine being in that position and having those two people being able to put them up and choosing to not put them up.
So the elimination game is, there's this wall of spikes basically, and they have foam. They're basically foam. They're foam. Yeah, balls.
It's like foam medicine ball. But before I'll let you continue with the elimination, I wanted to bring up the other big thing with Bananas. Where Bananas, he did a masterful job in the deliberation. But the reason why I have to talk about Bananas is because he is quite possibly the most insecure petty man in the world. Yes. Because he tried to ruin a pretty tame relationship where we really haven't seen any evidence of Devin, manipulating Michelle in any way. Really, Michelle and Devin being together is helping Michelle's game. This is the best that Michelle has come off in the first couple of episodes of any season she's been on the challenge. And they have a relationship that's been going on nice and everything, but Bananas is so insecure because he has one less person he can manipulate that he tried to manipulate here. Where he calls, they go out for drinks, you know, in between the deliberation and the elimination that night. And he goes, he pulls Michelle aside and he's like, he's using you. You need to make sure. I hope that he is really there for you and that he's not using you. And then Michelle, being the person that she is, she did the right thing and she went to Devin. I don't like how Michelle was getting mad at Devin for then Devin reacting to that, because I think that Devin had a reasonable reaction. If you care about someone and someone is trying to badmouth you to that person, then yeah, you should be upset. He's absolutely right what he told Michelle. He was like, if I wasn't reacting like this, then there is a problem, because then I don't care about you that much if I'm not upset at him trying to get in between us. So like, he calls him out the next day when they're in the house, and Bananas completely lies. He completely lies. And literally Olivia was like, dude, I was standing there. That's what you said. You said he's using you. And then even Michelle calls him out and was like, yeah, that's what you said. You said that I was using. He was like, dude, what are you even talking about? And then he tried to gaslight Michelle. He was like, no, I didn't say that. I just said that you need to protect yourself and that in case he's using you. And I was just like, yo, Bananas, you're just a very insecure and petty man. That's what you are, and you're upset that you have one less person for you to manipulate. And I love Carl. Once again, Carl was kind of in the same role that she was when Michelle was getting talked down to by Laurel, where she was like, yeah, I've been you before again, Michelle, with this whole Bananas thing. I used to be one of the people that Bananas, after a long rivalry between the two, they became cool with each other, and they had a couple of seasons where Bananas was able to manipulate and act like a friend to Kara to keep him safe in the game. And now he feels that, and it was really Kara and Paulie's relationship that ended that. That, and then when she got a relationship on the challenge, and I think that Banana saw that as well. He sees a lot, like Laurel, he sees a lot of Kara in Michelle, and he's like, oh no, it's happening again. I gotta get in between this. I gotta make sure this doesn't happen to me again. You are just a very insecure man, Bananas. And that's why you're single and you're in your 40s.
Yeah. I am never okay with people trying to screw with a real relationship. Like, Devin and they're together outside of this house. It's not like they were just hooking up. Like, they are together. So, and I said the same thing when Kara was being petty about Jordan and Tori. I don't even like Tori, but when they did the proposal and everything, Kara was like not happy for them at all. I was even like, yeah, like, she just came across childish, because like, they were together for a long time, you know, like, you can not like people and still be like, oh, you know, good for them. Like, you don't have to be upset about it. And trying to screw with someone's relationship is just like, that's not part of the game. You're messing with their real life at that point. Like, I mean, he's, you know, friends with Leroy. Like, Leroy posted a thing of him and his daughter FaceTiming Uncle Bananas the other day. Like, if someone was trying to mess with Leroy and Cam, Bananas would not be okay with that, because they are in a real relationship. Like, I don't like that stuff. That's why when Laurel was saying that stuff about Darrell, when he's got his wife, like, you don't do stuff like that, you know? And that, to me, just took, I mean, Bananas disgust me like 99% of the time anyway, but that was like a different level of, why are you doing this? You are manipulating her, and she's also very easily manipulated. We've seen that too.
She's another people pleaser. She tries to please people.
Yes. And like, you're manipulating her for what? Like, what are you gaining from this? I mean, him and Devin squashed all their crap years ago, but now you're doing this again. Like, I was not, and I was with Devin on that. She should not have got mad at him, because if somebody was saying stuff like that, and then I told, you know, my boyfriend or whatever, and they were like, oh yeah, then I would be like, why is this not bothering you that someone's saying that you're doing this? Like, you should want them to be upset about it. So that whole situation was just very odd to me. And the bananas thing, I agree with you. Like, you were 42 years old, dude. This is the reason that you've had several few year long relationships and none of them have ever resulted in anything more than that, because you're not a good person. You're always manipulating the person you're with, cheating on the person you're with, you know, whatever you're doing. Like, I really liked Morgan, and Morgan was like 10 years younger than him, and he cheated on her. Like,
yeah. Apparently that's who he cheated on when he got with Jenny. That's who he was cheating on.
Yeah. And I mean, Morgan won't ever come back to the challenge because of him now. So yeah, just not about it. Not about it with bananas. I need a break from bananas.
Well, we all need a break from bananas. And big up to, once again, we got to big up her, Tori, because Tori stepped up and she was like, you really think they're not in a real relationship? Like the fact that Tori got in that and said something, I got to give her credit, because that shows that Devin is really her number one. Devin is, because she stepped up and said something in despite of bananas trying to gaslight them. And then bananas saying, oh, you know, you're gunning for me. He was like, Devin's like, everyone's gunning for you. Like, what are you talking about?
You are Johnny Bananas.
You're like, Johnny Bananas. You are the person that everyone has loaded up a gun and bought bullets for. And he was like, he was like, oh, you're just waiting to press the button and go after me. Bananas, don't test him. Because every time Devin has done that, you've been out. Don't test him. I wouldn't test him. I wouldn't even try that. Why are you trying
that? I wouldn't put a bigger target on my back at this point. Like, sometimes it's okay to just lay low and not be Johnny Bananas.
Who was it that, when, you know, Devin kind of confronts Bananas about this, he's like, you allegedly said this, and I was like, oh, I'm glad you said allegedly, of like what I said here, because here's what I said. And then they did the talking head. It was like,
was it Olivia?
Yeah. Olivia's like, I was there. No, that's what he actually said.
Like, you're trying to lie. People heard you, my dude. Like, what?
Yeah, if you're going to be, I mean, he's been on this show for 75 years now. Like, if you're going to lie, you at least got to not have witnesses to prove that you're lying. Like, come on, Johnny.
The elimination. It is a wall of spikes. Again, these foam medicine balls, essentially. They're like the games that you play, like dodgeball with as kids, but they're a bit, some of them are bigger, some of them are smaller. It is Corey against Brad and Rachel against Shawnee. And you go until all the balls are basically outside of the circle. And you can play defense if you want, if you feel you have, if you have more than the other team. You got to throw them and get the ball stuck on the spike is how it works. And watching this, I was like, thank God Corey understands basketball and just throw a nice chest pass on this. You can aim it really well. You're taught this stuff in, you know, fifth grade, you know, your five-year-old basketball camp. Chest pass, push it out, aim right there, hit it, and then it sticks. You can put some power on everything. You got Brad just trying to like chuck these things and then go like this. Like, you got no control over this. What are you doing? So Corey beats Brad, and then Rachel beats Shawnee. And the funniest moment to me was when Shawnee is going and you hear Jordan yelling at her, because Jordan's got to yell at everybody. And then he's like, you throw it now, because Rachel's like bending down. Throw it now. She's like, what? And she's like, well, she can't play defense when she's bending down. And then like they had this close-up shot of Shawnee, and you see her just rear back and chuck it. I thought she was throwing the ball at Jordan. Like, she was still in this pit, so you could see it was going off to like one of the side posts. But the editing and the camera angle on it was so good that I thought she was chucking this ball at Jordan. I was like, I wouldn't blame her, honestly. Like, she's probably lost. Just waste one and throw one at her. But Rachel and Corey are the victors on this. And so Brad and Shawnee are going home. Era One loses another person. They are down to four people, three and a half if you want to count Derek right now. Ain't looking good for them.
Also, cool. Am I imagining it, or wasn't Brad a PE teacher at one point?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything.
But that's how he teaches the kids to throw?
Well, that's probably, again, he's used playing dodgeball with those. Yeah. Yeah, that's why he's throwing it like that. Again, you gotta go basketball here. That's why, because Corey didn't start out doing that. Corey was throwing it overhand and everything. And then they even did the confessional with him. He's like, chest pass. When I'm watching it to start and they're both just wildly throwing and missing, I was like, you idiot, just throw a chest pass here. This will work. And then Corey figures it out. And then both the girls basically did that. They saw that. Oh, yeah, this worked for Corey. I should probably do this as well. It's like, just throw a chest pass. What are we doing?
And Rachel did great. She had five to zip at one point.
Yeah. Rachel dominated her. All right, let's pull up the draft board here. Cher has lost Brad.
Of course I did.
And I thought I had Brad. I'm watching this. I'm like, oh, I lost Brad. That's it for me. And it turns out Cher has Brad, and SP3 has lost Jeanne. So
sad to see her go. I'm
cleanly through on this one.
Jeanne did not have a good performance, but I think there's a lot of people that watch the regular challenge who don't watch All Stars. And I hope that they realize that just because she didn't have a good performance here, Jeanne killed it on All Stars, and she deserves her credit for that, because she was amazing on there, and something that none of us really expected out of Jeanne too.
Exactly. The picks for next week, Darrell for Era One, because they wanted to spare Derek another week, I can only assume, and Tina, because that's literally the only person they could pick.
Tina does a great job of always popping TJ. Her hiding had TJ laughing hysterically.
Nehemiah is picked because, as Ryan says, Rachel wants to keep her gaze, so that is why. Can't pick Bananas 2 weeks in a row.
She definitely would have
But picks Nehemiah, and then Aviv gets picked because Corey did not want to pick Kara for Era 3. Jordan and Naya volunteered. And
you know what? At least Corey made one smart decision.
Oh, yeah. And picking Kara, or not picking Kara over Aviv. Yeah. Yet. And then Era 4, Kylan and Michelle volunteered. So that's who is up for elimination potentially next week. Those are the targets for next week.
I just noticed that Jeremy has 3/4 of the Vacation Alliance. The only one he didn't pick was Josh. Good job. Good job.
Go chat.
I mean,
still have Josh. Woo.
Yeah, still got Josh. And Ryan might get through just off friendships here.
Of not being picked to be a target.
Ryan's no real threat. We can just keep putting Bananas in. Then, okay, let's do that. I feel pretty good. I mean, we still got our basically CT's gone, but the rest of our top six are still there. And then if you want to include Jenny, then, six of the first seven are still there.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah,
it is.
In good shape. And I mean, a few of them have been up. Rachel's gone down there a couple times for elimination. Yeah. So
Jenny's been there twice.
Yeah. So a few of them have been down there a few times. I'm there. All right. That is going to wrap today, I believe. Everybody good? Anything else from the challenge?
That's all from the challenge verse this week. We will talk more about the challenge next week. Seems like a more busier episode. Not as annoying as this episode was with certain people. It'll be a nice eventful challenge based on the coming attraction.
I do not watch the next.
I know. That's why I didn't give anything away.
I appreciate it. New Love is Blind starts tomorrow, so we might have that to talk about next week. We'll see how far we, all three of us, get into this upcoming season of Love is Blind. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the challenge. And we're about 2 weeks away from our NBA preview with SB3 and 9. Cher, do you have anything to plug?
Hell no.
What chocolate are you eating?
Not chocolate.
Is it not?
There's a lot of me talking.
Oh, well, okay. Purple. Yeah, okay, it's purple. So on screen. Okay. On screen, it looks like it's brown, so that's why I thought it was chocolate.
Grape Laffy Taffy is the best.
I prefer banana. Grape's good.
Banana.
Yeah, banana is good. Laffy
Taffy. Ew, banana. Is
the worst. Ew. Hating on my banana Laffy Taffy?
Yeah. No. Ew. Red. I got red.
I mean, that's good. I'll take any Laffy Taffy.
Laffy Taffy's good in general.
Good song. SP3. I miss the bubble gum. I miss the James. I wanna da da dum. Oh, girls call me Jolly Rancher, cause I stay so hard. You can suck it for a long time. Oh, like, my, oh god. My god!
I will say, I don't have anything to plug because I don't ever have anything to plug. But I went to Lexington this past weekend for a book event because my life is just books, and I got to see Sean. Me and Sean went to eat at this pasta place that I go to every time I'm in Lexington. And we were sitting there and I got that message from you about the most viewed FMC. And I was like, I said it to him and then I was like, I wasn't even on screen. And he was like, I need someone to make a cut of the challenge that's just the eliminations and the daily challenges, because that's all I care about, because I don't know who any of these people are and I don't care about the drama. And I was like, just fast forward through the drama part, just watch. I was like, the only reason I watch that part is because we have to review it on the show, but I was like, that part's like the most uninteresting part to me too. I just like the competitive part. And then we brought up CT. Actually, I brought up Jack Swagger, and then we dove into that, and he was like, what? Like, he was a little shook by the CT revelation and all of that. But I was like, yeah. So that's, I got to talk about the challenge this weekend too, to someone who does not watch the challenge at all, but.
That's the best.
Yeah.
SP3, do you have anything to plug?
Check out True Hill Heat YouTube channel. I'll be live in like 2 hours with Romeo to review last night's Monday Night Raw. Very mid episode until the main event, though. But we will be talking about that live on the True Hill Heat YouTube channel. And check out the Takedown on SI, where I just did an article, the 10 greatest WWE wrestlers of all time.
What was the main event?
Last Monster Standing, Bronson Reed and Braun Strowman. That was good. That was great.
I go to bed like an hour and a half into that show. But
me too. Me too. I do too.
So Raw was like an hour from me last night. And everybody, we usually go to Evansville and everybody was like, are you going? Are you going? No. Because WWE doesn't do comps anymore. So until they do comps again, we will not be going. Because if I would have bought tickets to go see that and it would have been that show, I would have been so mad.
I was like that first hour, I was just like, oh my God.
My kids wouldn't even pay attention. That's how bad it was. My kids weren't even interested.
I was like, how am I still up? I was like, oh, thank God for Drew and Punk. I was like, I'll stay up for that. I watched that and then I was like, okay, it's time for me to go to sleep.
Yeah. I can't do it. I did see that next week is when it goes to 2 hours, and I was like, God bless.
And,
like,
and they stacked it. Gunther and Sammy and Jay and Xavier Woods. Yes.
Yeah, so it's also like an hour and a half from me. We'll also not be at that one. So stop asking me. No, I'm not going.
You heard it here first, folks.
We'll be back next week, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Enjoy your Tuesday. Bye, everyone.